Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. I don't only do radio here for you on this station, actually. I've been doing radio for 12 years now. Began in June 2003. Many of you know I've done shows on a wide variety of topics, including some fantastic shows such as Live from Syria in the War Zone, or reporting live from the United States Supreme Court ruling on the healthcare decision, where I was the first broadcaster in the nation to get the story right, to get the decision right. But probably one of my most powerful shows ever in all the almost 2,000 radio shows I've done in the last 12 years was on actually a different radio station in Washington, D.C. It was on We Act Radio, so you've never heard it right here on your station before. But I wanted to share it with you because I think the concerns expressed in this extended clip are timeless. I interviewed women from all across the country, all ages from basically a young adult to women in their middle ages, who had been placed as teens by their parents in some abusive camps. Now, these women had done nothing wrong. They had not committed a crime. They were simply considered unruly by their parents for various reasons. You're going to hear those reasons. And they were placed against their will in facilities. Some called them religious camps, sometimes residential treatment facilities. Sometimes they called them boot camps or wilderness camps, wherever they were placed, where they learned practically nothing, but they were abused physically and psychologically for most of their years there. This is not a North American torture prison. This is what has gone on and continues to go on right here in America. And rather than bringing in all the survivors to come back in and retell their stories, I thought today and over the next couple of days, I would play for you exactly what they said. Because the things they said on a smaller radio station in Washington, D.C. should be heard by all of you. So I'm going to begin right now. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I have just gotten back from an amazing 3 days right here in Washington, D.C. with the survivors of institutional abuse convention. Excuse me. There's international abuse as well. Actually, in some ways, the institutional abuse is much more frightening because I think we're used to, as Americans, to hearing horrific stories from abroad. There's massacres in Syria. I've gone on air. I've talked about them. There's horrors going on in North Korea. And as horrific and awful as those things are, and as much as I strive to help the people of Syria or to try to get rid of the terrible dictator in North Korea, there's something, I don't know, there's a special pit in my stomach and a special, hardness, I guess, that hits my heart pretty bad when I hear this stuff going on in the United States of America. Because I guess I expect other countries to have brutal dictators that mistreat or torture or abuse children. I don't expect it to happen in the United States. And what I've been learning through my work with the Survivors of Institutional Abuse and HEAL and CAFTI and other organizations that care about the ethical treatment of children, is, and it may astonish you, is that we actually mistreat children worse than we do adults. Now, that may surprise a lot of you because you'd think, well, a child obviously is in a much more helpless situation. You would think, well, if we're going to be harsh on anyone, right, you're going to be harsh on an adult. If you've got your husband wants some food or your child, you'll probably feed your child first. Your husband can go out and get some more food if he needs some, right? If it's a very strong punishment in the legal system in prison, you know, you kill someone and you're an adult, you're put away for life, you get the death penalty. You kill someone and you're 12 years old, a lot of times you're put in juvenile detention, and then you can get out and rejoin your life. We are harder, we think, in our minds on adults than we are on children. That just makes sense. Children are just growing up. They are learning. They are not as strong as adults. They need our help. So would it surprise you to know, because it surprised me, that tens of thousands of kids all across America are being treated worse than we ever treat a prisoner, an adult prisoner behind bars, and these are kids who've committed no crimes. If you don't believe me, stick around, because we're going to have a whole bunch of survivors of institutional abuse on this show, and they're going to tell you stories that they're just going to break your heart. They've broken mine, because, you know, I don't support abuse of adults. I don't support torture of adults. But children? Torturing children? Is there anything more cruel and wrong than torturing and abusing children?
We have to take a break, unfortunately, but we'll be right back with more of this interview right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. No calls today because we're having a very special story. We're replaying something you've never heard on this station before. Interviews from women who, as teenagers, were placed against their will in abusive residential facilities. Kind of like prison, only they've done nothing wrong. And the psychological and sometimes physical abuse there was far, far worse than anything you'd see in a prison. And it happened right here in America. And I know that's hard to believe, but listen again to these interviews.
Enough of me. Let me get to some of the people that that have suffered this and are so brave and so courageous. The person that I have next to me, Janine, I met her last year at the first Survivors Convention. And this is a woman who will tell you, I mean, you said you have stage fright, right?
I do.
So the fact that you're coming here on radio, that's extraordinary. And I'm really honored to have you here today. Janine, tell me a little bit about your story. Where were you placed?
I was placed in the Victory Christian Academy. And it was a reform school.
The Victory Christian Academy. Now, where is that located?
It was located in Ramona, California.
And how did you get there? Why did your parents send you there?
I consider it a kidnapping. I had a 3.5 grade point average in school.
That's very good. That's like an A-minus average. That's very good.
I thought so, too.
Absolutely.
I actually wanted to be in a Christian private school, and my parents placed me in there.
Speak really close into the mic.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
I had a 3.5 grade point average in school, and I was a strong Christian. I even had I Love God on my folder.
Okay.
No drinking, no alcohol.
Sounds almost, like you're a good kid.
Almost like a goody two-shoes. I say almost.
All right. Well, I mean, that's great. So you're a model student. All right. And so you wanted to go this place originally? You didn't know what it was all about, I'm sure.
The private school that I was at, that is the place I wanted to be. But I confronted my parents about sexual abuse that was happening.
Oh my God.
In the family, and they didn't believe me. And of course...
So I don't mean to pry, but you were sexually abused.
I was sexually abused by a family
member. By a family member. And you said, hey, this family member has molested me.
Right.
And they didn't believe you.
They didn't believe me. I was on the stand. I was in a trial, our personal family trial, basically.
Right. How old were you at the time?
I was 16 years old. And so the time of the abuse happened when I was 15.
And you confront your parents and you say, hey, this guy in the family raped me. You would think you come to mom and dad, you'd get a lot of sympathy.
Right.
And you didn't get that.
I didn't get that. I didn't get the proper treatment that I needed for that counseling. Basically what they did was they had told me they tricked me into it and said they were going to take me to a psychiatrist. And I believed them, and they took me to Ramona, California. It was a 12-foot fence with barbed wire, and wow. It was too late. I was already inside the gate.
This is astonishing because you've been raped. You've been victimized. That in itself, all by itself, is a horrific crime for which we put people away for the rest of their lives.
You then come home to your parents to tell them, of course that's who you'd come home to your parents to say, hey, this guy raped me. And they victimize you further by not believing you and not trusting you. And then you're sent away to a prison camp. And you're a complete victim here. That it's amazing that this is legal in America. So tell us about the camp. What was Victory Christian Academy like?
So excluding the torment that I experienced at Victory, let's just take it to the stop at the gate. I would say that that was far worse than the actual sexual abuse I experienced. I feel that I was so betrayed by my parents. And then just take me to the gate, just to the gate, and then leave me there at Victory. That was the biggest betrayal that I...
So they just like pushed you out of the car and said, bye. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. How did it happen?
So basically to the point where they had taken me, of course, when they put me on the trial stand at home, you know, prove it. I was getting angry naturally and crying and upset.
Sure.
So, you know, they just thought I was an out of control teenager, you know.
Even though you were a kid with a 3.5 average who's a goody two shoes at school.
Right.
Did they ever consider that maybe this family member had in fact raped you?
They kept going back and forth. It would either be, I don't believe you, you're lying, you're just doing this for attention, or my daughter's wild.
Did you have a good relationship with your parents prior to this incident? No.
No, that's didn't. Why I ended up
living
with other family members.
If you don't mind, so even before you confronted them with
right.
the incident,
there
you've been placed. So your parents basically, let's face it, weren't very good parents.
Right.
And that's part of what we're dealing with here. Not every parent is a good parent. Not every parent should have a child. All right, so you're placed in this institution, Victory Christian Academy. How long were you there?
I was supposed to be there for a year, and lucky for me, I got out after 8 months, but the first month of being there, the damage was already done.
Describe what happens. You got to understand, very few people have been in these places, and we really don't know what goes on there. So please explain what a frightened, sexually molested 16-year-old girl is dropped off by her parents, who's been betrayed by them. What do you see when you get there? I mean, your mind must be whirling already before you even walk in the door.
A preacher by the name of Michael Palmer took me into his office with my parents and said, you have given your parents enough trouble. You were here for a year. And they knew it because they knew where they sent me, that this was a reform school, because obviously it was for troubled kids, because he specifically said, you gave them trouble. And I said, how could you do this to me? How could you do this to me? And the other staff had taken me back to the showers.
And they physically grabbed you. I mean, I assume you didn't want to go.
I didn't want to go, but I really didn't put a fuss in because I knew what the repercussions would be.
You could figure that out already.
I could figure that out. So I just went along with the program because I knew that if I were to try to run, I would be tackled. Or worse.
What did you see happen while you were there in the 8 months? What happened to other girls? What kinds of abuses did you see go on?
I actually have the most horrific thing that I actually witnessed, that I actually put in a letter to Congress, is a 13-year-old girl being tormented in the name of God. By the way, you know, please let me reiterate that this is a Christian reform school. You couldn't just do whatever you wanted. This was a boot camp / concentration camp / cult. Girls were around in a circle, and inside the circle was a 13-year-old girl with duct tape over her mouth, crying. Her hands were behind her back, handcuffed. She was bound to a chair. I thought one of the other girls had put her in there. To my amazement, it was all orchestrated by a staff member. I was horrified. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't save this girl. I couldn't go to my bunk and say, you know, excuse me, I want to go read my Bible. I don't want to participate in this. You had to participate in this. You had to watch.
So it wasn't just that this girl was clearly tortured and abused. You had to watch it.
I had to watch it and not say anything, because if I said something, if I... I try to help her. If I took the duct tape off of her, I would be the one in a solitary confinement, or maybe even just like her in a circle.
So what are some of the things they did? They put the girls who would not comply, they put them in solitary
confinement.
Anything with food or shelter, or and in some of these cases, we're going to talk to some other survivors, they were locked in closets or forced on marches, anything like that?
Yes. Let me back up.
Sure.
Let's go back to the 13-year-old girl in the circle, and
please.
I'll close with this. She was in a circle crying. She could have suffocated.
That's true.
All the girls in the circle were going around saying something derogatory about her.
Oh, my God.
Lowering her self-esteem in the name of God. This is in the name of God. How can you slap on your title, Christian Academy? How can you do that? I just cannot believe that this is happening in America. And it's not just this school, it's many. All right, let's move on to solitary confinement. I was actually locked up in solitary confinement the first time I got there, and I was locked in there for 8 hours. A preaching tape was going on, and that's when I figured out they were abusing the girls in there. I knew they were abusing because I heard the sermons, and that to me was not Christian. I've never heard that in a church before in my life. It was an independent fundamental Baptist, and I didn't realize where the hell I was or what this denomination was until I actually got out.
And what was in those tapes? What kinds of things?
Basically, this preacher was calling the girls whores, blaming them for being raped. It was their fault.
Were you blamed for being raped?
Yes, by them.
Told them what happened.
I tried thinking that they were rational people. No, they actually sat down and had me pray to God, asking God to forgive me.
As if you'd done something.
As if I've done something wrong. Any rape counselor would have. I don't know. Just
what is
would
this?
Have went off on them.
What does this do to your brain? I mean, you're trained that. Being Christian is good. You're a good religious girl. You have I love God. You believe in this, and you certainly believe rape is bad. You learn normal things, and suddenly you're in this topsy turvy world where your parents are your enemies, where the rapist is to be forgiven, where Christian people are treating you badly and asking you to seek forgiveness. I mean, how does that affect your brain when? What you've known all your life is right and wrong is suddenly reversed.
Right.
How does that, did you have a breakdown? I mean, how do you deal with that?
I couldn't even have a breakdown at this place. They wouldn't even let you react. You were like a soldier in the middle of a war. You couldn't even react. You had no time to react. If you reacted, they would punish you further.
And give me again some of the punishments. So they're solitary. What were some of the things they would do?
Verbally abuse you in chapel, call you out. So in the middle of chapel, a preacher would call you out or call you a heathen. Again, the solitary confinement, standing a girl for hours, days at a time in front of a pole.
I'm afraid we have to take a break right now, but we'll be back with more of these horrific tales right after this. This is Mark Levine. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. The interview continues right now.
Wait, now standing, so the girl had to stand up in front of a pole?
In front of a pole and just...
Hours on end.
Hours on end.
It's not easy to stand up for hours on end. And what happens if she couldn't, she wanted to sit down?
Solitary confinement or other punishments.
You know, it's interesting. John McCain has talked about the fact of how horrible solitary confinement is. We actually... As prisoners, there are restrictions on how much you can place a hardened murderer in solitary because it's seen as a particularly harmful and damaging treatment, and yet they were doing it to teenage girls.
Yes. I also want to talk about the buddy system,
sure.
too. It was the biggest form of degradation to me. I had when I first got there, I had to be on Buddy for a month. And what Buddy is that you follow a girl for 1 month, 3 feet behind. You were 3 feet behind. So it was almost like an invisible dog leash. In fact, they went a step further that if you got out of the 3 feet and fell behind, they would actually put a dog leash on your wrist to the Buddy.
So it's all about control and degradation.
Yes.
Now, what's interesting is I assume your Buddy was a fellow, I guess the word is inmate or
right, troubled. Another student. In fact, my Buddy was 12 years old and I was 16. So this is another student.
And well, is she ordering you around now, this 12-year-old?
Pretty much telling me the rules, what to be expected, what I can say, what I cannot say. Freedom of speech was taken from me. I couldn't talk to any of the girls. I couldn't look them in the eye.
What happens if you looked them in the eye?
I would get punished.
You would get punished. Things like solitary.
A demerit, solitary confinement. Demerits were, I will not look at another girl. I will not look at another girl. 100 times, sometimes 500 times.
So after 8 months, when you get out of a place like this, how does that affect you for the rest of your life? You're a beautiful woman. You have a wonderful husband. I've met him. You seem to have a pretty good life. How does what happened to you many years ago as a teenager, how does that affect you today?
I'm not going to lie to you. It's a fight. It's been 24 years. And I do, on the outside, people would think I have it together. And in a lot of, we have so many facets to us. In a lot of ways, I am together. But then there's a part of me that does have the low self-esteem, that does have insomnia, that does suffer from depression. A lot of people don't even see that, you know.
Do you still have nightmares about this place?
I do. I've had nightmares about this place where I'm back in behind the gate and I'm trying to get away and trying to get away and I can't get away.
And how do you deal with your parents today?
I don't have a relationship with them.
I don't blame you.
I've tried 3 years after. I didn't speak to them for 3 years. I left home at 17. For 3 years, I didn't speak to them. And then, you know, I went back. You know, something happened in my life where someone close to me passed away, and I wanted to make everything right. And I went back to them, and I tried the relationship thing. But they still continue, you know, I want to say the Jerry Springer behavior. And you can either choose to be in a Springer show or you can choose not.
Luckily, as an adult, you have that choice to walk away.
Exactly.
The choice you didn't have as a teenager. By the way, how'd you get out of this place?
This is what I believe happened. And then my parents told me something different. My parents said when they picked me up, well, this is Easter and it's a time for forgiveness. And we forgive you. And that's why we're taking you out. The prodigal daughter returns.
Yeah.
If you know anything about the prodigal son, that's not a very good analogy. Yeah. First of all, you kidnapped me. You right. didnn't give me any money.
Right. And I was one of
the wrong analogy.
So, what do you really think happened?
What I think happened is, you know, I was at a private Christian school, and some of the girls that were there got placed into the private Christian school, and they must have said what was going on with this place. And I think that
the authorities came in and shut this place down.
Basically, they were spreading the rumor, which was true rumors about this place. And it probably got back to my mother, and they probably thought, what are you doing with your, why is your daughter in the reform school? Because no one knew where I was. I mean, right. It was a kidnapping.
So they were embarrassed by what they did.
Right. Why is this 3.5 grade point average in a reform school? So she probably got a bad reputation and then got me out early.
Janine, you walked with us at the rally, and it's amazing to me, for someone who says they have stage fright and is afraid. You told me at the rally yesterday that you weren't intending to speak, and then some brave people got up and told their stories, and then you came to tell your story. I remember you didn't want to stand on the podium. I kind of made you do that. So I said, nope, the camera can't
see
you
if
you're not on the podium. How does it feel for someone who, by your own description, is somewhat shy and has somewhat stage fright, to now go public with your story. How does that feel to you? Is it scary? Is it empowering? Is it both?
It's empowering, and I will do whatever it takes to get the word out. And even if it has, if I have to climb over this obstacle of being stage fright, I will do that. I will do whatever it takes to make it known that this is what's going on in America today. This is what's happening. What are we going to do about it? Are we going to let this happen? Allow this to happen? I'm sorry, but I don't know any reform schools or teenage programs so far that have been great and fantastic.
I don't either.
And anyone who says they are, and you've got a bunch of girls, 50 of them in the same place, but one of them is saying different, you need to realize that there is something called brainwashing, and it is like a cult. And after a while, you start believing these people. And
did you communicate with your parents during those 8 months?
I had no other recourse. If it was my choice, I wouldn't have.
Right. But yeah. Did you write letters to them?
I had to. Twice a week. And I couldn't write anybody else, by the way.
Only
nobody.
Your parents.
I had more rights in jail. I should have been in jail.
When you wrote your parents, could you tell them the truth?
No.
What
even
would
if
happen
I, even if
you...
I did, we're talking about my parents here.
Right.
You
that's
know.
True. You
if
didn't
I,
have
if,
very
let's
right.
just say I had normal
right.
parents.
Right.
Normal parents that believed me, I couldn't say, please help me.
They restrained me. They duct taped a girl. They handcuffed her.
No. If I had normal parents, if I did that, they read every single thing that was going on.
They monitor.
I couldn't make a phone call. I couldn't dial 911. I couldn't call my boyfriend. Please get me out of here. Please get your parents to get me out of here. Nothing. I was trapped. Trapped.
And this is what I'm trying to bring the focus on. It's amazing to me, as most of us, again, would if it, you know we would treat a child better than an adult, and yet in America you have legal rights as an adult and not as a child. And if you happen to have horrible parents, as I'm sorry you did, Janine, that's not Janine's fault. You can't help where you're born. You can be completely abused. It always strikes me that if a parent abuses a child, you know, if a parent were to duct tape a child and handcuff her to a chair or make her stand all day, you call Child Protective Services, they would come in, they throw that parent in jail. But the parent can pay someone to do that, and suddenly it's okay? It doesn't make any sense.
It
Janine,
doesn't.
Thank you so much for your bravery, for sharing this story, for being courageous enough to come on the
thank
radio.
Thank you so much for having me here, and I love you for doing this for us.
Thank you
so
Janine.
Much.
I appreciate that so much. I got my earphones on. In fact, I should probably take them off. Folks, if you want to call in and join this discussion, I encourage you to do so. We're going to have a testimony from survivors for the whole next 2 hours. Many have similar stories from Janine. Some things are a little bit different, but the same theme is the same. Helpless kids who've done nothing wrong, being tortured and abused. Why does this go on in America, and what we can do to stop it? There's actually a bill in Congress to stop it. I'm going to talk about that in just a few minutes, too.
Unfortunately, we have to take a break. We'll be right back with more of this interview. This is Mark Levine right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. More of the interview that we had to stop for the break right now.
This is Mark Levine talking about survivors of institutional abuse. You may not even know this is a problem in America. If you heard Janine's story, you cannot help but be moved by it. And I wish I could say that it was an anomaly, that what happened to Janine is just one example of awful parents sending one girl to one awful place. I wish I could say that it's not true. The next two ladies you're going to hear from were in a place called Strait that existed way back in the, 80s, I guess it was?
Early 80s.
Early 1980s. This is not something new. This has been going on for a long time. I want to ask you both your stories. So I got Dina here and Leslie here. I start with Leslie. Is that the rule here? All right. Okay. So let me take my headphones off since we're not playing the music. And I'm going to start with you, Leslie. So now you were not in Strait, but your brother was.
Correct.
And why was your brother sent to Strait?
It certainly wasn't because he had a drug problem.
Straight is ostensibly, by the way, a drug treatment
specific
center, right? Unlike the Janine was in a Christian academy. This was supposedly something to help get kids off drugs.
Right. It was specific to drugs.
Talking to the mic a little bit more.
It was specific to drugs and people that abuse drugs. Although I would say 98% of the people in there, children in there, did not have a drug problem,
including your brother.
Right.
So why was your brother put there?
Well, back in the early 80s with the Nancy Reagan just say no mm-hmm. whole thing, if your child was surly or your teenager was doing poorly in school or was belligerent to you or didn't follow the rules.
I don't know a teenage kid that doesn't talk back to their parents.
Exactly. But back then the big buzzword was druggy behavior. Your child, if you could not, quote unquote, control your child, they were a druggie.
So your brother talked back a bit to his parents and was put in straight. For how long was he there?
Total.
Put in the mic a little bit more.
A total of not quite 3 years, over 2.5 years.
2.5 years?
Over 2.5.
What are some of the things that would happen to him at straight?
He was starved. He was
starved? Denied food?
Absolutely.
Just they didn't feed him?
They didn't feed him, or if they did feed him, they had what they referred to as peanut butter diets. It was a punishment. And you would get peanut butter diets and a Dixie cup of water 3 times a day.
You would have to eat only peanut butter.
3 times a day.
And a single Dixie cup of water. You know, peanut butter makes you thirsty.
Thick peanut butter.
And this is just to torture him, I guess.
It's punishment.
It's punishment.
Not torture. It's
Excuse
punishment.
Me. Excuse me. Punishment.
Right.
For not complying with the
Whatever.
Program. And what are some of the things they would do in the program that he might not have complied with?
He didn't sit up straight. He wrote his moral inventories incorrectly, which is something that they had to do every night. We all had to do. Siblings had to do it.
Now, this is interesting to me. You're a sibling. You're not in the program. Why do you have to do anything?
Well, actually, as far as Straight Incorporated, the entire family cell, parents, step-parents, children, siblings, everybody was involved in some way or another. That's how they kept the whole cult-like process moving along, because they involved everyone. So everyone was a part of the brainwashing and their movement to make the United States drug-free.
I see. So you actually had to do things yourself. And I'm going to get to Dina's story in just a second. But your brother was there after 2.5 years. He finally got out. How did he get out?
This was not long after a very brave young man named Fred Collins sued Straight for kidnapping. He was 18. He said, I have rights. He escaped and he sued them. And there were questions, you know, not all of the parents were completely brainwashed. And one morning my brother spoke to my parents, told them some of the smaller abuses, because I think he knew if he told them about arms being broken and heads being smashed on the floor and stuff, that they wouldn't believe him, because it was the extreme. And my parents immediately pulled him from the program.
After 2.5 years.
Mm.
And then your brother got out of the program, but apparently the demons of the program continued to haunt him.
The damage was done at that point.
I guess post-traumatic stress syndrome would be a way of characterizing it.
He did, but, you know, hindsight, because back in the early 80s, it hasn't been till recently that bipolar and depression and all these newer buzzwords, and I don't mean that in a bad way.
Right. People understand more about
these
afflictions.
And back then, there was nothing like that. And if your child was a problem child, they were a druggie. So I think along with absolutely complex PTSD, and I think my brother was bipolar, and I absolutely know that he suffered from depression, hindsight, all of that took its toll on him. And not quite a year after my parents pulled him from the program, he killed himself.
One of the things that we did at the convention was read a name of documented cases of more than 300 kids who have been killed by these programs, some within this program, some from suicide after. Your brother's story, while it needs to be told, is unfortunately not an isolated one.
No, I have to say, because I read the names of people from Straight that have passed away, and I was shocked. I had 3 typed pages of names, and out of all three pages of names, there was one person that died from cancer. There was another person that died from an overdose. The rest were all suicide.
On my page, they all died from some of the restraints they used, forcible restraints where, well, actually, I'm going to ask Dina, I'm going to ask you about some of that because you were in straight yourself, right?
Yes, yes.
And how long were you in straight?
About between 2 and 3 months.
So that's not that very long considering, no. I mean, no. Leslie's brother there for 3 years.
Absolutely not.
And why were you sent to straight?
My mom tricked me into going there. I'm really quite not sure of the backstory because we still don't speak.
No, see, that's very interesting. This has been many, many years, obviously since the early 80s, and you don't speak to your mom.
No.
All because she incarcerated you for 2 months against your will.
Yes.
In the hellhole called straight.
Yes, and it was very hypocritical of her because I was not doing drugs and she was.
And she was?
She was.
Wow. So what did you see at straight? Tell me about some of those restraints.
It happened constantly. We were in a room at least at any given time with, I'd say, 400 kids is what it seemed like.
How old were you at the time?
15. I went in at 15, came out at 16. I turned 16 in there. And constantly, I guess from the constant stress, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at any given moment, kids were flipping out from being made to sit up straight in their chairs, like Leslie said, or their faces pushed a face forward or eyes on the person who was speaking, constantly poked and prodded, not able to use the restroom, not being fed, basically forced 24 hours a day to do things against your will. And you can only take so much. Any person can only take so much before you snap. And the second you snap, chairs start flying and that person is on the ground with at least six people on top of them.
And six people on top of them doing what?
Just holding them down.
Like one on one arm, one on one leg.
On the arms, legs, body, hand over the mouth. That to me was the worst, like having basically being suffocated and not even able to get a scream out or anything. And this would, until that person calmed down, which when you're filled with that much rage and frustration could be hours. And you still couldn't even, like, you hear it going on, but everyone's still made to face forward as if this isn't going on next to you. But it was constantly.
One of the things that, the extraordinary, weird stuff that goes on in places like this, one of the extraordinary things is in order to get their attention in a regular school setting, you raise your hand, I'd like to speak. It's hard to demonstrate in these confined quarters of radio station. I'm going to stand back. Mm-hmm. But can you show us what you had to do? Not as dramatically, perhaps. Is that would that be terrible to show what they made you do?
As far as motivating?
As far as motivating.
I couldn't do that. It literally, like...
It would drive you crazy.
No, it would make me want to throw up.
All right. Okay.
But I would like to mention something about the hand, if I could. Like, it had to be, you know, my timeline within there is completely screwed up, and I remember very little, but... One specific thing I remember is being a female, getting my normal cycle in there. I remember raising my hand because you had to, like, put your hand up like a flag to use the bathroom because we only got 2 bathroom breaks a day. And it being slammed down constantly. Like, within, you know, every time I put it up, it would get slammed down. I keep putting it up because I had to go to the restroom and I was made to sit in that chair all day in my mess.
I don't want to cause you any emotional distress, so I'll do this on camera maybe after you leave the radio station. I'll show them what, quote, motivating was. It's basically flailing your arms pretty wildly and wildly in ways that are really...
If you don't do it, they're, like, forcing you to do it. Like, people physically take your arms to force you.
And there was a lot of physical...
Constant physical force.
Physical force. Mm-hmm. And no escape.
No.
You're very brave to tell this story, and I really do appreciate it. I really appreciate you coming on and telling the story. Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today, but you are going to hear more of these stories tomorrow. These are stories that I'm sure break your heart, they break mine, and there is legislation we can use to fix these things. Legislation I helped work on with Congressman George Miller to help stop this abuse nationwide. But for now, first you just need to hear what these women have to say. So tomorrow... We're going to play more of these interviews from survivors of institutional abuse.